Hi, I'm Dr. Jack Arnold. Welcome to another episode of our joint ventures coverage of EULAR 2026, looking at the biggest abstracts and the biggest breakthroughs from this conference. And I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Laurence Duquesne, who is a specialist in RA research and has been heavily involved with one of the big studies at this conference. So,
thank you very much.
Just to start off, I wonder if you could give us a bit of a potted history, a 30-second summary of the team study and where it
fits. Yes, we've been very, very grateful to be able to present our study at this conference. So the study is called TEAMS. So it was an open label study, a pilot targeting people with newly diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis and stratifying them according to their T-cell naive frequency, so CD4 T-cells. So we were giving them standard of care and compare at short-term remission rates. We had an embedded randomized trial where those with abnormal T-cell frequency who were more likely, as we expected, to have a lower rate of remission were giving etanercept as well as methotrexate as first-line treatment.
Fantastic.
So the first results, so comparing those with the standard of care treatment, showed that those with normal naive T-cells reach the same remission rate as in UK data, which were 30% at 3 months, and about 40-45% at 6 months, whilst those with abnormal naive T cells reach only 11% at 3 months and 25% at 6 months. And for and with the second line of this trial was the etanercept, and actually the rates of remission were higher and meet almost the same rate as the one with those with the normal naive T cells. We were the remission was reached a little bit earlier, with already 40% at 3 months, and keeping at around 40%, 40-45% at 6 months, with a lower use of corticosteroids.
Fantastic. So fantastic results, really packed room for that talk, and,
yes,
and brilliant. It sort of drives at the heart of the earlier intervention, early prognostication in RA.
Yeah, exactly, because we realize now that many very good medications could be used in first-line treatment. I think the worry was the cost. And now nowadays, with biosimilar, we have these costs have decreased very significantly. And if we manage to target those who are at higher risk of having poor outcomes, it seems very logical to start and treat them as early as possible.
Yeah, so I suppose it's effective stewardship of these medications, isn't it? Which is fantastic for us, but also, I suppose, particularly in resource poor environments, would be very effective, you know, I presume.
Be very effective. There are some of my colleagues from different countries who tend to give first line for a lot of people, but for a short amount of time. And so, because it is known that if you reach remission as soon as possible, then you're more likely to have good long-term outcome.
Fantastic, fantastic. And sort of, I suppose RA has moved, as I've discussed previously with Dr. Kakar, we've moved into this earlier intervention phase, and that's been the big move, you know, over the last few years. Where do you see the field, you know, as a whole in, say, the next 5 to 10 years? Where's the move going to be?
Oh, so this is a much larger question, because here we were focusing on those with newly diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis, CCP positive as well. So there's a whole other area which are the preclinical phase of rheumatoid arthritis or other inflammatory arthritis, where now nowadays, we're trying to identify those at highest risk of developing rheumatoid and try to intervene before the disease arrives. So there's different approaches, whether people have try to target those at the highest risk or try to target those with already some signs of subclinical inflammation, thinking that the process is already en route. So why couldn't we widen the window of opportunity before that? So there's a lot of research on this, and they're extremely interesting because we are moving towards a preclinical intervention as if we manage to have the correct biomarkers such as naive CD4 T cells or other kind of inflammatory cells. I think the future will be very, very targeted, and we hope to get earlier remission as soon as possible. And I think what is really important here is all the economic burden and personal burden for these people. We had a question yesterday that was extremely interesting from Kenneth Baker, was asking about the improvement with job you say, keeping their jobs.
With workplace participation, exactly, and the economic benefit of that.
Yeah. Exactly, because here we can say that the cost is almost similar, but then we can have other benefits with the cost, and it's how we can prove that we can ask government to pay to agree to pay for early treatment.
And I suppose, the wider social benefit of keeping these people in work, keeping these people economically active, and just all of the social benefits that go along with that, that perhaps we don't quantify as well as we'd like to.
Yes, we could, because as part of government... sorry about that. As part of government recommendation, I think some of our questionnaires that we give quite often can be used for an impact case.
Build these cases into things. And if I might just pick your, just as a sort of last thing, if I might just pick your brains about the conference in general, about what you've been to so far. Are there any sessions that you would say are must-watch sessions for people on catch-up, or things that you've seen that were just really interesting and that you just...
So I think... At present, obviously, this is only the second day.
Yes, I'm putting you on
today,
the spot.
This morning, an extremely interesting intervention from a nutritionist, and we was showing all the different areas where nutrition could have an impact on rheumatic diseases. There was lots on rheumatoid arthritis, also on lupus, and there was lots of studies. And I think in the past we used to say, "Oh, this is too complicated. Diet is too. There's too many forms. It's too complicated. Trials. It's quite really hard to implement." But then there's a lot of very interesting data that have been shown, and also on the gut microbiota and the implication. And yesterday, obviously, that's my area of expertise, but yesterday there was some presentation on Priare, once again on the microbiota. So I think there's lots of data that are coming there, and obviously lots of basic science that can be sometimes for every clinician like you, like me, a bit out of the world. But then I think in the future, if they can be transitioned into clinical practice, clinical use, that would be fantastic. That session was extremely interesting.
Fantastic. There's a lot to think about. Thanks for speaking to me today. And then there'll be...